Hi, Dan.
Hello, Jason.
The trash truck is outside, and I thought of you. Not because I think you are garbage.
Thank you for clarifying that.
But because back in the old days when we did Clockwise, it was
a classic
moment when if we didn't finish or if the trash truck was a little bit early at your place, we would run into the garbage sounds.
Mainly in the summer when it's like the windows are open because it's super hot in my office.
Right. Sure.
But less in the winter. This week they came early, which was annoying. They come at like... most of the time they came, like you said, when we were recording Clockwise, which is usually around noon to 12:30. Every once in a while, they decide to come at like 7:30 or 8 in the morning. And I get up and I'm like, oh, they've already been here and I forgot to take out the trash.
Yep.
So the worst.
Yep.
That is terrible.
I have occasionally had to do the run outside in my pajamas and drag my recycle bin down the street to the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, we
come back.
I have teenagers who are supposed to take out the cans on Thursday night, and they don't always do that.
I don't have those,
so no. It's they're unreliable, Dan.
It's a long investment too to get to the point where you have them able to take out the trash too. Like, you got to go through a lot.
Yeah. So since we last talked,
Nothing has happened.
I went to Oregon. I was already in Oregon, but I went to the university with Jamie, and we looked at it and all of that, and then we came home. Right after we talked, I also talked on the phone with a representative of Apple Incorporated. Maybe you've heard of them.
And then had to make
plane reservations and hotel reservations so that I could unexpectedly fly to New York City on Monday morning so that I could interview an unknown person on Monday evening about an unknown product. And then fly home Tuesday morning.
Do they ever just, like, you get in the car and they put, like, the bag over your head and drive you to an undisclosed location and then, you know?
Well, it's a little more self-serve than that. It's more like you get in the car and you brought your own bag and you place it over your head.
Oh, okay.
It's a little more, yeah.
It's not artisanally designed diamond chamfered edged bag.
Actually, you know, when you get a review unit, you get to walk away with a bag with an Apple logo on it
because they put like it in a little store bag.
It is, right. But you can put it over your head if you want to.
Please do not put a plastic bag over your head.
No.
I don't recommend that. Make sure it's permeable.
No, the Apple bags aren't plastic. They love the environment. They're like super thick paper that probably can't be recycled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yes, and I walked out of that interview and briefing unexpectedly, not only with an interview, which was on Upgrade this week, but with a review unit under embargo of the new iPad mini, which was like an unexpected bonus.
Right.
Although, yeah. I mean, that was part of the inducement, I think, for me to come, was that I would get that briefing. I suspect I would not have gotten that briefing if I had stayed on the West Coast. Just guessing. It's possible I would have. But since they were doing those briefings and I was there, they gave me one and I got a review unit and I got to post a little review of the iPad mini that I wrote 3/4 of it on the iPad mini at Starbucks using a magic keyboard. There's a picture of it on Six Colors. You can see it. I did that just because I thought that was fun, and it totally worked. It's very small. It's nice. I don't really recommend you use a keyboard the size of the iPad mini with the iPad mini because it is very small, and they make them, but they're too small. I think you'd be better off toting a small Bluetooth keyboard and like I did with the magic keyboard in the Studio Neat canopy, and then like pop it out when you need to write something.
That's actually one of the reasons I went to a full size iPad at some point, was feeling like the keyboard options were better. Like, you know, obviously, like you said, you can use an external keyboard, but I wanted something that was more compact than toting around a magic keyboard or a Mac or the old wireless keyboard. And so having something like the Smart Keyboard, which is much smaller profile, and I don't have to remember a separate thing to carry around, was definitely an impetus for me to switch up to the 10.5-inch and the Air before that. Not that that has a Smart Keyboard. But.
And the 10.5, which is now the iPad Air, mm-hmm. right? That is... In fact, they said in my briefing, they said, you know, the reason we did this size is because it is the perfect typing size that the keys on the screen are full-sized. And then you can also do the, you know, do the keyboard with the width, and you've got full-size keyboard, whereas the, and I've got all of these, I've got the 9.7 smart keyboard, and the 10.5 smart keyboard, and the 11 smart keyboard, and the 12.9 smart keyboards. I have tried them all, and I have them all floating around here somewhere, and they're right. Like, the 10.5 is kind of where it is not a weird keyboard where, you know, oh, this, the command key is very thin, you know, very narrow. And that's when it becomes a really, like, if you want a device that you're either going to type on the screen a lot, or if you're one of those people who like typing on glass, or if you want to have, like, a case or cover or shell or something, the 10.5 is like the right size and above, because that's when the keyboard is normal.
Yeah. I like the 10.5 a lot. I have that now. What will be sort of an anomalous 10.5-inch iPad Pro.
Yeah.
And I like it a lot for
it's,
that.
It's less anomalous, right? Because in a sense, they're still making a device that uses all the same accessories, which means that they're motivated. You know, that accessory market will continue to be decent for a while because it continues to be a product that exists. That is exactly because that's the thing they did that is kind of un-Apple-like, although it makes sense, which is they didn't really want to do a redesign of these things. They're meant to be cheap. They don't need to redesign the exterior. And so they made sure they were basically identical, so they could just reuse existing accessories. So the iPad Air is exactly the size of the 10.5 iPad Pro, and the iPad Mini is exactly the size of the iPad Mini 4, and uses the all the same accessories too.
Yeah, I mean, this was a point that I made in my Macworld column this week, which is sort of about this idea that Apple has a great history of repurposing older devices for not just like updating them as it did with the iPad Mini, right? Because the iPad Mini is sort of like, well, it's still the iPad Mini, but the iPad Air is sort of the iPad Pro, but also not kind of the iPad Pro. And so they used kind of that as a platform for building and recontextualizing it, right? Like, it's not just that it's the same, an update to the old product. It's that it's a new product at a new price point with a new, you know, slot in the lineup, but it's built on this sort of existing chassis, and that helps them save, you know, I'm sure it helps save money in terms of like tooling processes and stuff like that, because they already know how to make these things.
Uh-huh.
And it's cheaper, and they can produce at scale and all that stuff because they've had the virtue of doing it before. The SE being the other major example of this, right? Because after the 5 and the 5S, both of which are very, very close to the SE, like it's fairly minor differences throughout all of those, they could make those super cheap by the time the SE rolled around because they knew how to make them in very high volume, and they didn't have to retool any of their product line. So, and it's not that it's just like, oh, we just kept making, you know, like the 6 through the 8, for example, 6, 6S, 7, 8, like they all use the same body more or less, but it's improving and making each of those sort of like the new, you know, with the side of the 8, they were making like the new flagship model every year. And whereas the SE was sort of like a side branch where it's like, oh, we'll just take this older phone, but we'll upgrade the internals. Yet we can build it for cheap because we're building it based on this old design that we used to use. So I think that's a really smart move on their part. And I think it's a move that a lot of other companies would struggle to pull off, because it seems like, oh, we'll just take this old thing and make it, you know, make a crappier version of what we're making. But that's not what they're doing. They're making newer, better versions. They're just sort of sticking with stuff, you know, building off these older products.
Right. The external designs already exist. And if the goal is to get costs down using the existing processes and the existing external designs, that's the best way to do that. It's the same. Apparently, people were complaining about the Apple Pencil 1 being used in these products, but it's like, of course they are. The Apple Pencil 2 was purpose-built for the new industrial design of the iPad Pros, and on a repurposed old design sold for a lot less money, you don't get that. That not only doesn't make sense in terms of price, but it makes sense in terms of the technology and the design. Like, it's not they're not going to redesign these cases to have a place to dock a magnetic inductive charging pencil.
That's just too expensive.
It's that like they would have to make a new one. And the whole purpose, I think, the whole premise of doing a new iPad mini is, okay, we'll do a new iPad mini, but we're really only going to change the internals. And that's what they did. And great. That's great. I mean, I actually think that a lot of people who buy Apple products would say, you know, guys, just keep updating the internals. You don't have to make every product a big new leap in design. You can do that with your products that are on the cutting edge. But for these products that aren't on the cutting edge, just keep them current, right? And that's the argument here, is that it's been whatever, 3 years since they did that for the iPad mini, but here it is, like, yes, okay, we kept it current, and now it does Apple Pencil, and it's got the A12 Bionic in it, and it's like, yeah, good, like, that's all we really want.
And a lot of people would make that argument for the SE too,
exactly,
because it fills a niche that is not filled by any other Apple phone, and if they just kept it sort of pacing with the technology, it would sell fine. But, you know, I think they have their own rationale for doing what they're doing. Yeah. I'm surprised. I would be shocked to think that the SE doesn't sell at least somewhat well. And I also would not quite... I know there are the cynical people out there like, Apple needs to, you know, raise their... you know, their ASPs on all their phones now, so they can't afford to sell a cheaper phone. It's like, well, it's not that it was ever necessarily like... just that it was a cheap phone. It was that it was a small phone. It's like, they could make a better small phone and sell it for more, and some people would probably still buy it.
Indeed. And in fact, the argument of the mini is that now that they make the sixth generation iPad that's $329, the mini used to be the cheap iPad and the small iPad, and now it's just the small iPad, and you get it because it's small and it isn't the cheapest iPad, and it's more capable than that iPad, but it's also smaller. And you could make the argument that the iPhone needs something like that, needs a product that's smaller, and it doesn't necessarily need to bear the burden of being the cheap iPhone, but that there should be a smaller iPhone than the iPhone 8. Which is the small iPhone right now, which is not a small iPhone at all.
Yeah, no, I totally agree about that. I think it's interesting because of the march has been so to bigger and bigger screens, but it just feels like you leave a big section of the market untapped. Yeah. And it's this, like you said, same thing they did with the mini. There are people who want smaller devices.
Yeah, and they have five... they literally have five iPads now, right? And it feels okay. In fact, I think this is the right way to do what they're doing with the iPhone, where they're selling old models at discounted prices. I feel like the best way to do it, and they may be creeping toward it with the XR and the XS, and I realize the dynamics of the cell phone market are different, although and they're changing rapidly to be more like a computer buying experience, and I think that's pushes this a little bit, but like maybe the ultimate destination is to have these product slots with product names that are stable, and
the
then
iPhone,
you update
the iPhone mini,
and then you update the internals rather than keeping pushing up with the counters, right? So keep updating the internals, so you don't need to have the iPhone 7 still for sale. Instead, you've got an iPhone that shape and size, and every 2 or 3 years you update the internals in it, and that's that iPhone model. Yeah. And then there's a cutting edge design up at the top that's the Pro, basically, iPhone. And I wonder if they will go there at some point, because you can't, you know, even the Roman numerals or
oh, yeah.
If you go back, like it's iPhone 13 is not a thing that anyone really wants to see, I think.
Yeah, I think the interesting part about that, too, is this whole... there's the sort of snarky comments going around about the AirPod 2 release this week, including the ones where like, they look the same as the old ones. How will anybody know? I've got the super cool AirPod 2s instead of just the lame AirPod 1s. And I think that's true to a certain extent with the iPhone lineup, too, right? Because you've got the point where basically, you know, the 7 and the 8 and the, you know, 6, they all look... pretty similar, right? Like, and I have people, the 10 and the 10s are basically indistinguishable.
Yeah.
And so at that point, it's like, well, if I'm not like needing the cachet of showing off my phone anyways, or people can't tell already, then yeah, I'm totally with you. Why not have, you know, the iPhone Plus, the iPhone the Plus is larger, there's a mini that's smaller, there's a more expensive version, and there's a cheaper version.
And then
I think you could do fine.
Every 2 or 3 years, the iPhone Pro or whatever becomes,
the iPhone,
looks standard, new, and and maybe the that design gets pushed down into there are still ways to do that without it being I guess the argument that I've always heard about the phone stuff is people saying, well, the thing is, the way phones are sold, everybody doesn't want to say get the new iPhone, they want to say get the iPhone, you know, unique signifier, and every phone is like that. They're all kind of numbered, and it's just for this year's model. And I see that. At the same time, that argument doesn't entirely hold water for me, just because it's Apple, and I feel like if anybody could get away with changing the way the game is played, it's Apple.
Which they have. I mean, to a certain extent already at various points. But yeah, you're totally right. I mean, like, yeah, just the practicalities of the naming, even as you mentioned with the 13. Like, I'm somewhat questioning where they're going this year. I mean, they went from 10 to 10S, which at least followed the pattern that they had used in previous iterations. But does it go to 11?
Yes, or is there like a 10V?
Oh yeah, are we just going to start adding 10M. Extra letters to the end? Oh God, please stop.
I don't know. Yep. Funny world. What else was I going to tell you about? Well,
there's a week. It's been a week full of Apple announcements.
So many.
I mean, so many.
Oh, I was going to say, it is fitting that as the new AirPods get announced, that I think my right AirPod is dying. It occasionally just won't connect to the other AirPod, the AirPod acts like a mono AirPod, and there's the other one is like it's just like it's dead. But then I put it in the case, and it says that it's got 30% charge or something, but it's just not connecting some of the time. And sometimes it's like it'll connect to my phone fine, but it won't connect to my Apple Watch if I go through there. And it's like, oh, okay, you're dying. It's getting toward the end.
I've seen this from a lot of people who were basically early AirPod adopters, that we're just about hitting the edge right now. So that's what, like 2.5 years or so?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and it sounds like, for one thing, like the batteries are so small that they don't last as long, just longevity-wise, in terms of like, well, it's been 2.5 years. Batteries degrade, and these are very, very, very small batteries.
Small batteries, yeah.
It's not surprising. And then I've seen a lot of people like you talking about connection issues. So it sounds like, unfortunately, the AirPod lifespan is probably about 2 to 3 years, or at least the AirPod 1s. We'll see if the AirPod 2s do any better. Yeah, that's a weird situation to be in, too, because they're not cheap.
No.
It's not cheap to replace your AirPods every 2 or 3 years.
No, they're pretty great, but they're not cheap. It makes me wonder, it makes me wonder about, like, should I get a replacement earbud, or should I just give them up and just say, well, they're dead?
You can put a new battery in, but you have no guarantees that will fix your connection problems.
That's true.
It's cheaper, and you could then like sell them or pass them on to somebody else, and at least they'd be minorly functional, and they're not just the disposable earbuds.
Yeah, I did buy a new pair, but that's also because of what I do.
Sure.
But AirPods...
Here's my query. Did you buy the charging case, too? The wireless.
I did because I have two Qi pads in my house, and I thought that would be nice because a lot of times when I'm charging them, it's the middle of the day, and at least one of those pads is empty, and I could just plop it down on there and let it charge rather than doing what I do now, which is fish out a lightning cable. So I did.
You're not charging them on your AirPower though, clearly.
Yes, well, if I were, I couldn't tell you.
Well, sure.
And I'm not.
That was, I think, one of the biggest surprises. Like, it's something that I reevaluated myself this morning when it didn't happen. Because Apple sort of set up this, like, oh, we did new product releases 3 days in a row. And everyone was like, trend, they're going to do the entire week. Which, I understand 3 times in a row is a trend, as the old journalism saying goes. Mm-hmm. And so people expected more announcements. Those didn't happen. In retrospect, I feel like maybe expecting the AirPower wasn't the right move, because all the other products were updates to existing products that didn't need a story told, right? They're better iMacs, the iPad mini's back, there's better, new versions of AirPods, but none of them are significantly different from their predecessors. Yeah. Whereas the Air Power, despite the fact that it's, you know, a year and a half since they announced it, it still does need, it probably needs some sort of like, here's the Air Power and here's what it is and here's why we're selling it. Like, it needs a little explanation. It needs a little story behind it, I feel like. So maybe they'll devote more time to it at some point when they release it, or maybe they'll talk about it on the Monday. I don't know. At this point, it seems kind of, but it seems like there's been enough stuff going around talking about it that it's imminent. Like, there was a trademark filing, like they made a deal with the company. There was some reports that it's coming late March, which is quickly expiring. I keep hesitating to say where there's smoke, there's fire, given the problems with the Air Power, because hopefully there's no fire. That's not what we want.
Yeah, I don't know. It could come anytime, though. I think what that's shown is that Apple can release a product and announce it anytime they want.
Sure. It seemed like it would make sense to release it along with the AirPods 2 because of the wireless charging case.
Right. And yet they didn't.
And yet they did not. So clearly they have something else in mind. But it remains the weirdest product Apple has ever discussed, both in terms of how far in advance they talked about it.
Right. The weirdest product Apple has ever announced, I guess we could call it. Right. That it's still not here, and they kind of like it just vanished, and that is, I mean, there are other nominees, but that's it's a pretty good one, especially in its current state of having not actually shipped yet. If it actually ships, we can
and having been in, you know, largely erased from the website. Yeah. Like,
no, the only Apple product that has been officially like admitted to from Apple that never existed that I would nominate to be close, and again, they didn't. It wasn't announced, but it's Asteroid.
The breakout box.
Because they filed all
that.
Those lawsuits about Asteroid, which was the FireWire breakout box that never was announced.
Part of me always wondered if that was like a canary, essentially, to like track down people leaking. Like, oh, this is just plausible enough that we could be making it, and it will help us root out who is leaking all this information.
And part of me wonders if they didn't release it out of spite.
That seems like such a weird thing. It's not out of the question, but it's like,
well, in the Steve Jobs era, it was more likely than now.
Way more plausible. Like, I can see Steve Jobs doing that. Although at the same time, if it's an opportunity to make money, you feel like that's probably not, you know, fiduciarily, that's probably not a great
move. I'm not sure Steve Jobs cared about fiduciary responsibility, to be honest. I was actually thinking about this in the context of me interviewing the iMac product manager this week, because one of the stories that I think doesn't get told as much because partially because I think the people who would talk about it are people who generally have a positive view of Steve Jobs. It does get a little awkward. Like, I'm reading Leander Cani is coming out with a biography of Tim Cook. That's pretty good so far, although it's a NetGalley PDF is what I got, and it crashed my Kindle. I got to like chapter 3, and then every time I open it, I just can't advance. It locks up when it gets to a certain page, and I can't advance.
I've never seen a book crash.
It's not the first time. There are some weird books that will crash the Kindle, and it's hilariously awful. Anyway, but it was, you know, Leander in that book points out some of the stuff that has gotten pointed out, like how Tim Cook, like literally the week he took over, he put in like employee matching programs for charitable donations and things. And, you know, people don't really go into it a lot, but basically, I mean, Leander mentions it. He's like, basically Steve Jobs, when he was running the show at Apple, kept cutting back charitable things. He was just not interested. He was like literally not interested in Apple participating, even in its employees' charitable contributions. And it's funny now with a little bit of time to compare and contrast Apple under Jobs and under Cook, where Cook is very, you know, when Apple talks about changing the world and being a good corporate citizen and all of those things, those are Tim Cook things. Those are not Steve Jobs things. Steve Jobs basically was not interested in anything but the product. That was what Steve Jobs was interested in. And I say this because another aspect of this in the Steve Jobs and Katie Cotton, who ran corporate communications for Apple for years, and her PR team, they had a view of how they handled, you know, it was secretive and you'd get access and then you wouldn't get access, and they play people against each other, like, you know, oh, well, Mossberg has access on this one. Why is that? And then, you know, and I definitely was in the washing machine on that, where sometimes I would have like, oh, you've got the iPhone. And then the next time all my colleagues would get the iPhone and I wouldn't get the iPhone. I'm like, okay, what happened here? And that was just all part of the, you know, you could be in the doghouse, you could be out of the doghouse. And part of that was also that it was all on background. You very rarely could quote anybody directly. I had to get, when the G5 launched, I had to get and my story this week reminded me of this, because it's the closest, my interview this week, it's closest I've come to that experience when the G5 launched, where we got the tour of the G5, which is, if you think about it, there have only been two professional Mac enclosure designs in the last 17 years. It's more than that, but this was 17. Jamie was a baby and now she's going to college. That's how long ago it was. They bought an Apple onesie in the company store while we were doing the demo, because I had to bring my family with me because we were on our way to Southern California for the 4th of July weekend. This is the G5 story. But that helps me place it, that, you know, we had the trash can, and then the one before that was in 2003. I don't remember, the summer. Somebody can look it up, but it was a long time ago. My point is, that one, it was Greg Joswiak and John Rubenstein, and they gave the tour, and I actually put them in the story, you know, Phil Schiller appeared, but, like, Apple was super reluctant to go beyond a very small pool of people to be even identified by publicly at all, let alone speak with their voice and their face anywhere but on stage. And even on stage, it was super limited to, hey, Phil, jump off of this thing with an iBook. And I was thinking about that because I think the truth of it is that taking names out of the about box is the same thing. Some of it was about Steve Jobs being paranoid about being raided, about how great Apple's employees were and how he didn't want names out there because it makes, you know, then they're going to get stolen by other tech companies. Of course, we know now that he also had lots of illegal nudge deals with other tech companies, which is, again, illegal, immoral. But the other part of it is, and, you know, it's hard to say it because and I'm not negating his brilliance, but he wanted all the credit. He was not necessarily entirely out of ego, although certainly partly out of ego, but also because I think he knew how powerful it was for Apple to invest so much branding in the myth of Steve Jobs, right? I think it was both. Yeah. I think he was very canny as a marketer. I don't think it was just an ego trip.
I think some of it is, I also think you can't probably discount some of the spite of having been fired, essentially, and like from his baby, you know, and being sort of summarily dismissed to go off.
Well,
it is a
savior narrative, right? The early days, especially. Later on, not as much, but in those early days, it was absolutely a Steve, you know, and I think completely legitimately, like, we need to show Steve in action because the only thing people trust about Apple is Steve. And so we're just going to keep showing Steve, right? Like, Steve needs to be. And I think Steve Jobs knew it, too. Like, he was the representation. So it wasn't even just like the revenge of returning, but like the return narrative was super important and powerful.
Yeah. I will say, if you're looking for a really good dramatized, not like literally based on this, but the show from a couple years ago, Halt and Catch Fire, Lee Pace plays essentially a Steve Jobs-esque character. I think it's one of the...
Does he have a big hammer?
Yeah, right, exactly.
He's Ronan the Accuser.
It was a weird choice for the blue face paint in this.
That's
but,
right.
It's really interesting.
Of great products for you.
And then he makes a pie. I don't know. It's very confusing.
It is.
Yes, but anyways, I recommend that as a sort of interesting, you know, totally fictionalized, dramatized look at the technology industry and about the idea of the charismatic leader in the technology industry.
I like how we've invented a new character, Ronan the Introducer. That's great. Or is he Ronan the Innovator? I don't know. It depends. He's really about, he's more of an onstage persona. Anyway, my point is, I interviewed this woman who is the product manager for the iMac, and it was this idea where, like, they want her out there. They want her voice. I would not be surprised if we at some future point see her on stage. I feel like part of this was kind of like coming out sort of thing of like, here she is. But my bigger point is, old Apple would never do stuff like this. Like,
yeah,
because that was not how things were done. You did not spread, you know, you did not try to construct a personality or a set of personalities as like, it's the great Apple team and they all have their areas of specialty. But I think in the post Steve Jobs world, this is one of the clever ways that Tim Cook and Steve Dowling, who is now in charge of corporate communications, he's got the Katie Cotton spot, have rethought a lot of things about Apple presents itself to the world.
And some of that is also, I think, a function of just the environment that we live in these days, where Apple knows, for example, Apple knows it has a deep bench of talent.
Yeah.
And a certainly more important in some ways, a deep bench of talent that is diverse in a way that their traditional are not. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
They know they have to, you know, they have to walk the walk and talk the talk. And that means, like, A, yes, they definitely should be looking for more opportunities to diversify their management team, but they also need to be, like, looking for more ways to show off, look, this is, you know, we do have people who are working in important roles from all these different backgrounds and of all these different, you know, races, genders, creeds, etc. And I think that's important for them to project, because again, I think they do talk the talk about that kind of you know, especially in the Tim Cook era, they talk the talk about the diversity, inclusion, and like their moral and social responsibilities, etc. But you gotta put your money where your mouth is and actually show that there are people. It's not just a bunch of old white dudes talking about, like, oh yes, this is really important to us.
So when I finished my interview with Colleen Novielli, I went back to the hotel and did a search, and I found that she has a Twitter account, and it's got Apple stuff on it. So we were like, we're going to link to it, and I'll mention her name, because her screen name, because this seems like this is not a personal account, but she had like 5 followers, and now she has 872, which is not, you know, which is good. It's not enormous. It's not tens of thousands, but and that happened in a day. And my point here is, we do live in a world where social media also kind of amplifies to play in that. You need to have people and personalities, and like, and then they all kind of pull in the same direction. I think it's a useful thing. So now people know the name of this person who represents the iMac at Apple. And yes, she's going to get like, why didn't you do this tweets and things like that. But it's another conduit from Apple's perspective. It is another PR conduit now. Her Twitter account is going to fly the flag for Apple products. And maybe they will say, you should do some tips about the iMac, or, you know, whatever it is. But it's the truth is, that is part of doing a PR and social media strategy today. So it pays off in a bunch of ways. And so what I'm not saying is, haha, take that, Steve Jobs. What I'm saying is, Steve's approach, I think, represented a time when Steve came back to Apple where it needed to be the approach. It has been startling as somebody who covered that Apple to see just how different their approach is now. And I do think it's smart and appropriate. And this is just about the personality thing. I haven't even mentioned the fact that, you know, I got an embargoed interview for a podcast from Apple.
Right.
And it is literally the first time I have been to any Apple PR orchestrated anything because of my podcast rather than my writing.
Well, and you know, obviously we've seen a bunch of Apple execs show up on the talk show in the past several years. But we also had ATP this week,
Phil was on ATP last week. Yeah, and they've had other little bits. Do they have Craig at one point? Really briefly. I mean, they are doing this now, and I think it's great. Like they seed stuff to YouTubers. They've done interviews, and when they did, like, Renee did an interview on Renee Ritchie on his YouTube channel / podcast, Vector, with Tom Boger, who is the Mac product manager, who is, I believe, as she referenced in the interview, Colleen's boss. And he used to be the iMac product manager. So she's got his old job and he's her boss. But Renee interviewed Tom, and I remember when that interview dropped, I was listening to it on the way to an Apple product briefing last fall. And I remember saying to Bill, the Mac PR guy, basically, that was really good. You guys should do more of that. And he was like, yeah, we're gonna try, right? And you know, the fact is, internally at Apple, I don't know how it works, but I think clearly there's discussions about what should we try and did this work and all that. And the pitch I gave to them was more for podcasting in general than for me in particular. Although certainly if they do more podcast stuff, perhaps, especially since I'm local and I could literally drive to Cupertino to do an interview. Although instead I flew to New York. I don't know what that's about. That they should do more, because like that Renee's interview with Tom was great because it wasn't just the PR speak. It was also like, hey, I'm a person and I have this interest. And with Colleen, I got a little bit of that too. And like that benefits Apple to have people to get the idea that human beings work at Apple and they care about the products they are releasing. And you know, the Jobs era was kind of like a black box that from which products emerged, you know, and the choruses sang and the lightning struck and all of those things. And I feel like we don't really live in a world where that PR strategy is going to work anymore, and they know it. Yeah. and they're trying to do new things, which is great.
We almost got Eddie on the rebound, but he thought it was about basketball.
Yeah.
So we really, unfortunately, kind of nixed it.
It's a shame. Also, you had to put Lex on the disabled list. It's also a shame. So sports metaphors. Well, all right. Big week. Fortunately, next week will not be a big thing. So we'll
quiet.
Wait, what? Oh, that's the other thing going on here is me going, oh, and then Monday is an Apple event. Oh, my God.
Yep. Never rains, but it pours.
Well, yeah. Like, remember... And this was my foreshadowing. My foreshadowing last week on the Secret Podcast, the only place where I did any foreshadowing in advance of going to New York. I guess, I mean, we posted on Monday while I was on my way to New York. We posted a thing saying the show upgrade wouldn't be on until Tuesday because of travel, which was technically true, although also misleading. But... last week on the Secret Podcast, I said that thing about how Apple was, on the move, waking from its slumber, its post-holiday quarter slumber. Yeah, this is what I was talking about, is that I knew I was supposed to go to New York, and it's like, or I was supposed to get a briefing. I forget the order, because originally I was going to interview somebody in California, and then it was like, how about New York? I'm like, I don't know. Anyway, they're awake now. I'll tell you, this week showed that, and then next week we're going to get that event at the Steve Jobs Theater, which will be fascinating because, like, I imagine the invitation composition will be different, that there'll be these, like, kind of, like, entertainment and media angles coming out of it, and it'll be fascinating. I also think it'll be interesting in the sense that I doubt there will be much that we walk away from the event with, right? Because they're not releasing products. So we're going to walk away with, like, ideas about what Apple is doing instead, which is interesting. You can't put an idea in a paper bag with an Apple logo on it.
I mean,
or can you?
You can't.
All right. Yeah, I can't. Somebody at Apple probably can't do it. So anyway, yeah, it's what a busy time. I wonder what we'll talk about next week.
We'll have to come up with something.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll make it work.
Otherwise, who knows what?
Yeah. Oh, boy. It's exhausting even thinking about it. Well, okay. On that note, thanks to everybody for supporting Six Colors and listening to this podcast, this silly podcast that we do. I left the door open the entire time thinking the cat would come in and meow at us. Didn't happen. Cat doesn't want to be on the podcast.
That's fine.
It's okay. But he doesn't understand. In the social media world, the cats need to be heard on podcasts.
The cat's off on Twitter posting
probably
stuff.
Probably. All right. Yeah. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.